Feel and Vegan podcast, episode 109. I just wanted to follow up on some new discussions that have been developing between and then the welfarist abolitionist debate. It's a very real debate. I recommend you get involved in it. If you care about animals, if you're vegan, and if you want to make a difference and want to actually do stuff and be active, you need to know that there is a debate, and it's between opposing views. Okay, one of us, the abolitionists, one view is that we are completely reject what the activities and the advocacy of welfare. We want nothing to do with it, and we wish everybody else would stop doing it and would start doing unequivocal nonviolent vegan advocacy. And the other view, the opposing view, can be kind of a confusing view sometimes, because on the one hand they say that we are all part of the same movement, and we all are doing the same things. We're just doing it in different ways, and I think they truly believe that they are helping us with our vegan advocacy. In other words, they're opening people's hearts and minds and blah blah blah, and so they think we're mistaken, that the views are opposing, which is kind of weird, because we're saying, hey, we don't agree, and then they're like, yes you do, you just don't know you do. But they get very, and then they say we're being divisive and stuff. But there's this very big debate, and it goes on all the time. One of the best places to watch it is on an abolitionist page, because, or like Gary Francione's abolitionist approach Facebook page, although sometimes people can just sort of get quite rude. But that's why everybody kind of gets rude online. But the debate has been raging now for a good 6 years. And the good thing about it is that there's lots and lots more abolitionists, because they finally got a chance to hear this other view. People finally got a chance to hear this other view. And so we are seeing people who used to support welfare and agree with welfare and really think that's what was helping animals. And they are... they were exposed to this debate, and they saw the other view, and they said, hang on a minute, that makes a bit more sense, let me just check it out. And they kept involved, and now they are convinced. So it's actually a thinking movement. The abolitionist movement is made up of people who are thinking about the issues. The reason I say that, I'm not trying to say that the welfare movement is not made up of thinking people. What I'm trying to do is point out that this sort of myth that it's all this like cult mentality and lack of thinking is about as opposite as you can get from the real deal. So it's a very, very important debate, and we don't think the welfarists are helping us with vegan education. We think they're actually hurting vegan education, and making people feel better about using animals. And I've experienced that over and over and over and over again at my street stall. And my last podcast, I just want to clarify, because I'm sort of bummed, because I'm like, oh, somebody could listen to that and get the wrong idea. On my last podcast, I was talking about how there's this misconception that there's a misconception, first of all, that, and I think I figured out what all or nothing means, is when the welfarists say, oh, you're all or nothing, is that they think, for some reason, that when we say, do vegan education and don't compromise the moral message about what we're doing, that we expect people to go vegan instantly. So like our sort of way of approaching things, they seem to think, is that we say to someone, go vegan now, you have to go vegan now, it's a moral obligation. And in that very second, the person has to go vegan in that very moment. And if they don't, then we say, oh, well, goodbye then, and we never ever talk to them again. Or if they say to us, well, I can't go vegan, or I'm not going to go vegan, or I'm not interested in going vegan, then we just give up on them and we don't continue to educate them. And what the welfarists say is, well, you could just tell them to cut down, just tell them to cut down. And I just disagree with that. I think that you just let them know that they can be vegan, and you always talk about veganism, and if they want to take steps in the interim, then they can. It's illogical for anyone to assume that we don't recognize that less harm is, quote, better than more harm. It's illogical to assume that another human being doesn't already have that conclusion in their brain. It's just, the point is, do we want them to do less harm or do we want them to do no harm? Well, it's impossible to do no harm, but do we want them to strive to do the least possible harm that they as an individual human being can do, which is to go vegan? Yes, that is what we want. So let's tell them what we want and let's give them the opportunity to get there. And don't hang them up and distract them with the quicksand and the bog and the quagmire of the compassionate consumption, cutting down, I'm still doing heaps and heaps of good stuff that's going on. You know, and it's so frustrating, you know. And animal welfare doesn't work. The animals aren't being helped. They are still suffering horrifically. It's just nonsense. And I did say in my last podcast, I was like, if the person wants to go, like if I talk to someone about veganism, 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 and then they go out and they're surrounded by these welfarist messages and then they go and buy, it's, you know, the welfarists are convinced that these supposedly higher welfare products are actually meaningful to animals. And I completely disagree with that, having read all of the things and seen videos of the supposed, you know, the supposed humane labels, where it's completely and utterly ridiculous. They're mistreated because they're property, and property has no rights, and the rights of the property owner will always trump, and blah blah blah. And it really does make me sad that there are those labels out there for them. I wish that they weren't, because of this way of thinking, because people after a lifetime of conditioning aren't gonna, or very few of them right now, although things will change once the grand sort of social sort of zeitgeist starts to change and it's more in the air. But right now, you know, people might take a lot longer, especially if they get bogged down in vegetarianism myth that there's a big difference between meat and dairy, or if they get bogged down in the welfare stuff. If their natural logical conclusion, because they're not stupid, is that, well, less, they can do less harm, and even though we want them to do as little harm as possible, they might turn around and say, well, I'm going to start cutting down on the amount of harm I'm doing until I get used to the idea, or whatever. If there was none of these lies about, this is what we mean by it makes people feel better. This is what we mean. So you take someone, they are never really thought about veganism. They've never really, you know, but they might nowadays have thought about it. And then they talk to a vegan advocate like myself, and I say, hey, you can go vegan, you can do it. You don't use any animal products. You don't eat them, you don't wear them, you replace your household cleaning products, you replace this, you just remove yourself from the cycle of exploitation. And if you want to do it, start now, and here's the information, and you're going to have to learn, so you're going to find out more and more things that have animal products, and it's a process, just like I went through, and I share all this stuff with them, and they say, boy, I'm just going to sort of think about this for a while. But they're thinking about it, and then they think, well, okay, that resonated with me in some way. And then they go out and they see happy, happy, happy chickens with their happy, happy, happy eggs and all the pretty pictures and all the animal welfare groups saying, you can be a compassionate consumer. Do you think that this person who cared and who was troubled by their participation in harm, do you think that they would go vegan quicker if there was none of these happy labels out there to make them feel better and make them feel like they were reducing harm, which they're not? Do you think that they would, if all there was the truth, which is what we're trying to expose them to, they would go vegan a lot faster because they would realize very quickly that that's all a lie and that they're causing horrific harm and there's no such thing as happy consumption? I do. I think they would, but they don't. And then they go around and they get lied to, and the welfarists believe their own lie, and they think that these chickens are really happy, and they conveniently don't think about the slaughterhouse, or they say, well, the slaughterhouse is just a small amount of the time, but we're worried about all this other time, so let's get them out of the cages. And put them in one big cage, and that's better. And anyway, there is a very real reason why there is this debate, and it's very important to inform yourself as an advocate and read both sides of the debate. And if you are challenged, or you reject when we say animal welfare doesn't work, and you say, well, that's just a nonsensical statement, how can they possibly make that statement, try and read some of the things that try to prove the case. Like, the arguments, as you call them, just as we do when there are people who say animal welfare works, and then they post all of these supposed studies. But they're so deeply speciesist, those studies, because we would never be calling them, you know, we're so much better and we're getting rid of so much of the worst abuses. We would never be doing that if it was human beings in these horrific conditions with these minuscule supposed changes that don't even come into effect. And we're talking about torture and slaughter. We're not talking about voting rights or, you know, educational opportunity, which are human rights and which are, you know, but without their fundamental basic right not to be property, the right to your own bodily integrity, those rights are meaningless. So read Introduction to Animal Rights by Gary Francione, or at least watch the video Theory of Animal Rights, which is based on it, on his website, and get going and get into it. And if you care and you want to be active, well, inform yourself, please, because it's very, very important to know. And you know, we really want to start a real abolitionist movement, and we need people to do that, and we need informed people, educated people. We need people who know how not to fall into the trap of welfareism when they're advocating to others, and not to lead people down the wrong trail of continued speciesism and continued devaluing of the moral personhood of animals and the rejection of it by, you know, but you need to educate yourself. So start now, because there's a lot out there to learn, because it is a complicated issue. There is no, I mean, the easy answer is veganism, but if you're really indoctrinated and you really do think that welfare reforms are helping animals now, and that they're just, it's just so easy, you just pass this law and then the animals are way, way better than they were, and you know, that was really great, then, you know, you need to educate yourself, because you're incorrect, and so there's a lot of debates going on, and usually what'll happen is like, for myself, when I do a podcast episode, it's usually triggered by something that I've had happen when I've been talking to either non-vegan about veganism, or when I've just upset or whatever. But one of the things that's been happening, one of the new kind of things that I've noticed with regard to this debate, which I generally follow on Gary Francione's Abolitionist Approach Facebook page, is this notion, and I'm just backing up, like, I just want to put this out there in podcast world, what Gary Francione was addressing recently, kind of recently, over the last couple of weeks, because there was some people on there who I mean, we've always kind of had this said to us, but he kind of wrote a blog post about it as well, which I'll post. And it's about how we're not being compassionate educators, or gentle educators, or kind educators towards others, we're taking such a hard line with people, like, we just won't compromise the moral message, you know, and all the human rights analogies are there, just apply it to whichever one you will, but I think it's really, really, really important for people to know that you can actually be a really empathetic listener and compassionate educator. And you know, the word compassionate has become so corrupt, it's just so welfarist, but there is actually this beautiful thing called compassion, and it is nice. And you can be a gentle, in other words, you don't need to be abusive and stuff like that, educator, and still be completely inflexible on the morality, which is what we need to be. You can understand the fallibility and then the indoctrination and all these kinds of things, but you can actually, I mean, all I can just talk about is my stress level, because that's where I am put to the test as a human being and as an educator, because first of all, there's no delete button, and unlike text, or you know, type, where it's all monotone, and they, you know, you can use caps, which I don't advise. I've stopped using caps. I've tried to stop using them. I used to use them to emphasize words, and I changed my mind about that, because it is like shouting. The thing about face-to-face advocacy is the main thing to realize is once you've opened your mouth and the words have come out, you can't take them back. Whereas on the internet, you can type something up and read it a few times before you send it, if you have the, you know, hopefully you have the sort of presence of mind to do that. Or if you're like me, you can write it and then you can think like, oh man, I really just want to delete that. I don't want that to stay out there. Maybe somebody's already read it and you deleted it and they've already read it, but at least it's not just sitting there. But when it comes to one-on-one, if you say something to someone in that moment and then think to yourself, gosh, I really shouldn't have said that, it's too late. And so it's a really good learning experience doing street advocacy on how to be tactful in and quick thinking, or to I'm getting better. Like, it's taken me a long time. I've been doing my street stall for, let me think, 3 years now, I think. Is that right? 4 years. 4 years since my first street stall in August of 2009. And the conversation has changed radically. You have to believe me what I'm telling you. In my one city, in my little part of the world, the conversation at my little street stall has radically changed from what's veganism to my son's vegan and I really want information about veganism, or my daughter's vegan, or I want to go vegan, or oh my gosh, I don't think I can go vegan, but I've heard about it, or I'm vegetarian. And then I'm like, well, the vegetarians were always there and I'm always trying to educate them. But there's still all of the same kind of objections, and the myths are still very much entrenched. That's why Gary Francione's book, Eat Like You Care, you know, the it's just an advocacy tool. The majority of our use of animals and the majority of the objections to veganism are around the animals that we eat. Now, Gary Francione does not think that veganism is just a diet. He has written, I mean, if that's what you think, then you haven't read anything the man has written. Read Introduction to Animal Rights. But it's the most common, you know, it's so funny because like when I've had conversations about people online and I'm like, please don't, I'm totally against promoting veganism as a diet, as an arbitrary diet. I want it to stay on the victims. Well, Eat Like You Care is all about the victims. So just read it and learn from it and go out and do vegan advocacy and use it, because you're going to be able to have conversations about veganism, not just food, but veganism with people using that book. And you'll find, like I've said this to people before, look, when you go out and advocate, because people are like, well, it's easier to talk about the health benefits and blah, 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 blah. You shouldn't overlook that and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, don't overlook it and don't ignore it. It's the best one because it's just, I can't even remember. It's just, you know, they always like think that there's another misconception that they think we completely neglect to talk about this. And I've said before, when you talk to someone about veganism, and you start out the conversation, and I'm sure I've done a podcast on this because I feel like those words are echoing, and you start out the conversation about rights and non-violence and animal rights and respect for others and these concepts of like, you can live without exploiting. Do you want to be part of a system of brutal exploitation, or do you want to be a citizen who stands up for the rights of others and acts in that way, and you know, all these kinds of things? You're still going to be talking about food and diet. You cannot avoid it because the majority of our animal use is for food. So you start out the conversation about their personhood and about these things, these concepts, and you are inevitably going to be asked, oh, what about iron? What about protein? What do I eat? I don't know what to do. Da-da. And then you can talk about, and you can't avoid it. Even if you did want to, which, you know, why would you? Because it's education. It's educating people on how to be vegan as part of vegan education. People think that we go out there and say it's a moral obligation and that's our entire education. They so misunderstand. Why do people misunderstand? Why? So, no, you have in-depth and educational conversations, and I made a nutritional pamphlet. I mean, I copied the Boston Vegan Association's nutritional pamphlet and just tweaked it for New Zealand by adding a couple of words, but it's their nutritional pamphlet. But it's so in-depth, and you give those out. I mean, I wouldn't have those at my stall if I thought it was completely unnecessary to educate people about food. But the bottom line is, unless you get them thinking about the moral the moral personhood, if it's just an arbitrary thing like a diet, like a gluten-free diet or whatever, you're not going to, it's not going to be about the right thing. It's just going to be a diet, and they can just cheat, or they can just do it when they, you know, whatever. And if they don't get the so-called benefits, because I never promise anything. I say, listen, I'll tell you what happened to me, but I'm not saying it's going to happen to you. Like, I never get colds anymore. I mean, I haven't had a cold since about a year or even less after I went vegan is when I had my last cold, because it took a while for my body, I think. So now we're talking, I mean, I went vegan in 2007 in November, or I just made the decision to go vegan. I did not successfully become vegan until I learned all these things. Like, I was still drinking non-vegan wine, for example. So health-wise, I'm pretty sure I got everything else out of my diet apart from that. But in terms of that, and so it took a while, but I have not had a cold or flu. I just haven't. And I used to get them every year, just like everybody else. I'd get two or three colds a year, or one or two, and I'd get the flu at least once a year, and I don't ever get them anymore. And I can only attribute that to this. Although, I mean, I just, there's no other logic. From the age of baby to 34, I got colds and flu regularly. Since I've been vegan, I haven't. All kinds of other things have happened in my life. I've smoked cigarettes, and then I stopped smoking cigarettes, and da-da-da-da-da. I moved countries and stuff. Still got the colds and flus, no matter what else was going on. So I say to people, hey, that's what happened to me. But I say, hey, I know vegans who get colds and flu, so I'm not telling you it's a cure for flu and colds. I'm just saying my health has improved, and even the vegans I know who do get colds and flu, they say that it sort of lasts a little bit less, or it's not as intense, or they recover quicker. But, you know, even if they don't, gosh, I'm going off on a tangent. I usually try to avoid going on and on about the personal health benefits. I just try to say to people that it is healthy. And my anecdotes are very good, though. Like, I'd stopped getting colds and flu, and my acne disappeared. I mean, for me, that's, like, pretty cool. But I try not to do that. But you're not going to be able to avoid talking about food with people. It's the most common thing that you can talk about. I mean, I try to talk about other stuff. I try to say, remember, it's all these other products too. Remember, don't forget about them. Don't forget about your shoes. Don't forget about your clothes. Don't forget about your entertainment. I always have to remind them, because they're thinking about what they do 3 times a day, 7 days a week, and what they do for social gatherings. I mean, it's the biggest sort of social event, is like food around and stuff. So you are going to be talking about food, but you're going to be doing it from a baseline of the moral personhood of animals, which is exactly what each like you care does. So I really recommend doing that. But my whole point of this podcast, sorry, is that is to sort of back up, or to sort of share this debate that's been going on, and then this other thing that we're sort of accused of, like, you know, you're just going to turn people off because you're just totally uncompromising about the morals, and you don't work with people. They're basically saying you people don't get it. You have to work with people, or you're just going to run up into a brick wall, and you're just not going to get anywhere. Well, first of all, if that was the case, please explain to me why the vegan population of the world is growing so quickly in just the very recent last few years. Since the Abolitionist Approach website was released, and since there's been more vegan advocacy, and I'm talking even in New Zealand, and it's just becoming, you know, I think it's because there are people promoting veganism unequivocally. The welfarists are going to say, no, it's because of us, but whatever, I don't agree with them. I really just don't see how that's possible, since they've had these welfarist campaigns in New Zealand for a couple of decades or more. But anyway, so here's a poster that Gary Francione put out in response to this ongoing debate, sort of this thing that was getting to a point where it was lots of people commenting about how you need to educate people gently, or you know, in a smart way, or, you know, they think that we're ignorant in the way we're trying to educate people, apparently, according to some of the comments, or maybe because they're just going by the statements that we're making, and they don't realize that we back them up and that we work with people on them. You have to make those statements. People are going to object, and then you deal with the objections. And that's just the way it is. And yes, you are going to get angry and defensive people. You know, so what? Just deal with it. That's what you have to do. So he made a poster, and I'll post it on this podcast episode. And it says, being a gentle educator does not mean selling out animals to make people feel better about continuing to exploit them. And that's because the people who were telling us that you have to be gentle educators were people who were saying, you know, you need to promote welfare reform in order to make to wake up their hearts, and then, you know, and this is it's really just sort of the same objections and the same debate over and over and over again, just framed in a different way. And it's the same misconceptions about the efficacy, ooh, efficacy, I think is the word, of unequivocal, non-violent, vegan education. So I'm just going to find this article that, oh right, compassionate violence is not, no, that's not it. Understanding the welfarist position. I'm just going through these articles. Ah, here we go. This article that Gary Francione wrote was prompted by some people in this debate, because we are engaged in a debate. That's why it's going on, and it's a very public and it's a necessary debate, as I've said, necessary, necessary. The same way that the debate between the abolitionists and the regulationists in the history of U.S. race-based slavery was a necessary public and important debate to understand which side, which did you agree with, and you find the one you agree with and you go with it. There is no I'm both. There's no I'm an abolitionist, but I promote welfare reform. If you're promoting welfare reform, you're promoting welfare reform. You're not promoting abolition. You can't do both. You're speaking out one side of your face and then the other. You're working against abolition if you're reinforcing their property status by promoting welfare. But anyway, so on the let's see, I'm going to post this article. This was, well, I can't remember when it was. Oh, on September 2nd, so a month ago. I'm a bit behind the times. Yeah, that's right. So it's about judging. Oh, and he also, and if you listen to Bob Linden Go Vegan Radio episode from the last archive from the 22nd of September on Gary Francione's segment. On he's doing that regular segment on oh, I don't know if everybody knows, but on there's a podcast called Go Vegan Radio, and the host is Bob Linden. Gary Francione has been invited to do a brief commentary every single week on that show, and the topic of the guest commentary, and you can find it in the archives, and then you can hear this guest segment. I can't remember how far in it is. It's about 20 minutes in, or halfway through the show, or maybe near the end. I'm sorry. He did a commentary on this judgment thing, because that's what it was. It's like they're saying they're trying to sort of like they're the welfarist people who are coming on and seeing the abolitionist approach page, and they're not used to seeing these kind of statements, because they're in the welfarist world where they see things like, you know, be compassionate, reject factory farming. I mean, they don't even use the words reject. I mean, what is some of the welfarist rhetoric? It's all very wishy-washy, basically. So they come on and they say, you're really judgmental. If you judge people, they're going to turn off. And they sort of seem to think that we don't understand that people are going to become defensive, and that what they don't understand is, like, that is a part of it. You have to cause that. You got to confront the truth, and then you deal with the defensive reactions. It's not about insulting people, but it's about judging conduct, and it's not about judging the individual. So you can make statements like, you know, animal exploitation is immoral, and then the person's going to say, well, you're calling me immoral, and it's like, well, we're talking about animal exploitation. It's not just about you. It's about that system of thought. It's this paradigm of thought, and let's put ourselves outside it for a second and examine it from the outside for a moment. Take yourself out of it, and we try to get people thinking critically and thinking clearly about the issue. So Gary Francione wrote this blog post called Making a Mockery of Gandhi, because of these objections about how we were told that we are sort of, what would be the word, incompetent educators is basically seems to be what they think is, you're incompetent educators. So the article is really good. I'll just read one statement. Not judging conduct or not judging it soon enough. This is from the article. Not judging conduct or not judging it soon enough is what is accounted for most of the moral disasters we have had through history. It is what is at the root cause of the problem of animal exploitation, and why the dominant response to that problem is the absurd and unjust happy exploitation movement. None of this has anything to do with compassion. It has to do with putting a stamp of approval on harm. It has to do with declaring injustice to be acceptable for the sake of compassion. And that is deeply twisted thinking. So, because there was this, there's a lot of, So basically another part is that he was talking about this objection, and he said that these people, they think that we should not only not judge the individual, they're not saying just that, but they think it's wrong to say that the conduct of animal exploitation is morally wrong. The welfarists say we should not only not judge the person who is, for example, consuming cage-free eggs, but also that we should not reject cage-free eggs as involving animal exploitation, because that would not be compassionate towards the person who is consuming the happy eggs. And so that's, anyway, read it. It's really good. And so if you're, everybody's got their own personality, and everybody's, you know, you're going to meet people who just dislike you. They don't like the sound of your voice, and they just, you just annoy them or whatever. And people are going to do the same to you. But if you are consistent in your message, and then when you get the objections, the face-to-face objections, mostly people are desperate to learn. They really do care, and they want to learn, but they give up on themselves, or they say, okay, I've also seen people who have violently opposed me on my Facebook page, me the Facebook meme, you know, had really angry reaction, and I was getting private messages and all this stuff about how I was just this and I was just that, and I stuck to my grounds. Of course, it's not about me. I was opposing the promotion of meat-free Monday and vegetarianism or something. I can't remember what. And then, you know, so they'll absolutely attack, like get really angry and start, they went calling me names and all this kind of stuff. And I want to make it clear that I try not to do that at all. And it's hard when someone's calling you a name not to turn around and just be like, F you, but you can't do it. So don't do it. But then I later saw the same person on another site, and they had thought about it, about the things that we were arguing about vegetarianism, and they were defending the position that I was defending to them. So what that tells me is that their violent reaction and their defensiveness and their anger was because they actually could see the truth in this position that I was sharing, and it bothered them because it would mean that they would have to, admit, you know, that the position that they took might not be correct, might be the wrong position, and it made them very, 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 very upset in that moment. But after thinking about it, they went away and they started to change their thinking. They didn't come back to me and say, you know, I've thought about what you said, and I think that you had a point, because they didn't like me at all. This is just on Facebook. I mean, this person doesn't know me, but this is what happens, and that's why I know darn well that when I have conversations with people at the store, because I know this myself, that when they sort of get defensive, the last thing you want is for somebody, first of all, the people who just look and just don't even care enough to even read the word, or don't even care enough to come over to you. That's what you need to worry about. The people who come over and argue and argue and argue, those are the people you're getting thinking. They're thinking about it. We cannot underestimate the importance of that. Don't take the knee-jerk reaction on face value that this person, you've scared them away forever, and they're never, the last thing you want is someone to come over and be like, oh, okay, whatever, yep, I don't really care, you know, or just like, or even someone who just comes over and says, oh yeah, okay, I agree, but they don't you don't really think they agree, and then they just walk away and they don't bother to discuss it. When you get someone who reacts and keeps discussing and racks their brains to think of things to say that are gonna, you know, prove that you're making a mistake or something, those are the people you're getting thinking. And I believe that those are the people who go away and who had the seed planted, and they will make change, because I do believe that most people are good inside. I know that there are some people who are very damaged, and I do believe in psychopathy as a sort of thing, but I mean, I'm not an expert and I could be wrong about that. I'm only reading what others have written, but I do believe it. And so get used to the reaction, and your way of being being compassionate is not getting angry back, and not name calling back, and trying to respond to what they say, but keeping it consistent. And even if they get more upset, and I'm talking online or offline, we can't sell out the animals. We have no right to do that just for our own personal comfort level. And I do strongly believe, and I've said this before, that this whole sort of objection is because these people don't want to deal with uncomfortable situations. And when you have someone and they say, I'm never ever going to go vegan. I love animals, but as long as they're treated okay, then that's fine. And then an abolitionist would just say, well, if you were treated okay, and then we would decided to kill you, would that be okay? You know, we say things like that to people, and they think about it, and they say, well, no, but because it's only because the other animals are non-humans that they say these things. Whereas, and then the conversation might get a bit tense, where they might say, well, animals aren't the same as humans, and this is the language that people use, and blah, 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 and you have an interesting conversation. But you can be patient and you can be a gentle person, but you can do that without compromising the moral message. And you can get people thinking. But if you just say to them, oh, well, if you buy cage-free eggs, then they don't actually have to make any changes. And then everybody, there's no more argument, because they'll agree. So you got them to agree to something. I mean, I think that these people just don't like the disharmony. They don't like the disharmony. These people who want all this sort of compassionate, which I don't believe it is compassionate, because it's not compassionate to kill animals for their taste buds, is it? That's what Gary Francione is saying in this article. It's like, he said that they are, what is it saying? Anyway, it's good, but but if you let someone sort of, if you don't challenge the person, and you say, okay, and they say, well, I'm going to buy free range eggs, and you say, okay, they've just agreed with you, and so you can feel good about yourself and pat yourself on the back that you feel that you've helped this person make a change, which you really haven't, because there's no difference between free range and non-free range. But at my stall, I often, the conversation will, like, they will say, like, they'll just keep saying, oh, I can't go vegan, and I just keep saying, yes you can. But I don't always get an agreement, because I'm challenging people who've sometimes never even thought about going vegan. So if I was to base my own personal wish for self-fulfillment on people saying, okay, I'll do this, then I would never be an effective educator. I would be telling people to just cut down, because everybody says, oh, well, that I can do. Okay, well, I'll just cut down then. And then you can say, oh, yay, score. They agreed with me. I win. And then they can say, hoo-hoo, and then they feel like they've given something to you, but they haven't had to compromise anything, because they're still going to continue to exploit animals. And then you can all dance into the sunset with your arms linked. And meanwhile, you know, you've done nothing but make them feel better about continuing to use animals. So you do have to sort of toughen up a little bit, but you can be a patient and gentle, if you will, uncompromisingly moral on the moral issue educator. And you know, it's when it comes to veganism, it's the exploitation is it's just so different in some ways, because It's really, truly, really, really well and truly up to that individual to remove themselves. So when I, you're talking to people who have the power in their hands in that moment to end their participation in this exploitation and violence. And you have to focus them on that because there's all kinds of terrible things happening in the world that I want to see abolished, such as child sex slavery. And as I've said in one of my YouTube videos, you know, the first step is don't be a child sex slaver. That's the first step, you know. And after you've done that, you know, educate other people. And, you know, that's, I mean, I'm just saying that obviously that problem is still huge, and there are still consumers of those products of child sex slavery. But the first step is for you to not be in it, not be doing it. You can't be doing it, and it's easy for you to not do that. It's just as easy for you not to engage in child sex slavery as it is for you to be vegan. In fact, it's probably a little bit easier because child sex slavery is not, you know, in every single supermarket and in every single thing that you know, buy and blah blah blah. But the decision is just as easy. It's just like, don't do it, and then you go and you find out how to avoid doing it. And gosh, I'm not making a lot of sense, but you just have to show people that they have blood on their hands, and their absolute desperate desire to avoid facing that is what you have to firmly, firmly, persistently, and uncompromisingly challenge. And it's just so silly. I mean, I don't know where these sort of people who don't think that we understand this, think we are living and stuff. Because, you know, I live in a job. I have a job where I work in an office. Well, I work in a like a office environment, and I have posters on my cubicle that are vegan, and I have my jacket that I can wear that's vegan, and I'm constantly talking about it because it comes up whether you like it or not. So, and I don't have a lot of time or chance to advocate it because I'm too busy, and also because I see these people every day. So, but you know, I don't even have to initiate the conversations. They just happen, but I never back down. And I still can work amongst these people. I hate the smell of the kitchen, and I say that when I'm, if anyone, you know, you know, you can be outraged about it, and but in a way where you are not coming across as somebody who's unhinged, because it's not unhinged. It's not, it's perfectly sane and rational what we are vegans to be outraged about this. It's exactly the same as if we were lived in a world in which there was child pornography playing on the, on every, you know, on the office sort of communal TV room, and you were the only one who thought it was, who knew that it was wrong, and everybody, you know, you'd be outraged. So just, yeah, so being, I don't know if this made sense, but it's, these are the kind of things that you have to consider when you decide which, what am I going to do when the next time I have a chance to speak up for the victims of exploitation. Am I going to face up to the challenge of being the person who sticks to their guns, so to speak, and makes the other person face the truth? Or am I going to worry more about that dynamic that I'm having with that person, and not, so that it doesn't get too uncomfortable, and then they use the excuse that they're going to scare them away and they're never going to think about it again? Well, I think that's a load of rubbish, because I know, like, I even had someone, I see it in myself, like when I'm challenged on certain things, I get very defensive and stuff. And then the reason why I got so defensive is because I knew that they were right. So, and they can go away later and they can change and they don't have to tell you about it because their pride won't let them. But that's fine by me. I don't need to know, I just need to keep doing what I'm doing and being that unequivocal voice. And you know what? I don't want to discourage you either, because I'm telling you, you'll find there's a difference. Now, I'm living in a place where the change is happening now. There are some people who are living in a place where they were, where it was like where I was 4 years ago at my stall, where people were just like, walking past and saying, meat is good or something, because they didn't even know what veganism is and they just thought it was misspelling of vegetarian. And or people would be like, what's vegan? And then I'd explain it to them and they'd be like, oh my God, that's crazy. Now it's all this, and it's these wonderful conversations, and you are, it's like I've just try it and just don't compromise. Learn how to not compromise the non-humans, and you can still actually part with a shaking hand and an encouragement, and you and you've it's that that's the honorable thing to do, is to not compromise those victims and what's happening to them. That's dishonorable. So just I really think it's really important, because it's just we're running out of time, and we just need to stop this. It has to end, and it's not going to end unless we get out there and promote veganism. It's not. Please believe me. So learn how to get out there and be unequivocal and not sell out the animals and be a good educator. And you're going to make mistakes and you're going to have a bad day. I had a bad day just the other week. I think I did a podcast about it. And all those kinds of things. But the more you practice it, the more you will be quick-witted, the more you'll hear the same question and you'll already be formulating your answer and just waiting for them to finish, because you've already know the answer because you've been asked that question a million times before. And so you let them finish and then you answer them. But it's an easy answer to you because you've already figured it out, because you've either read it and it makes sense, or you've, the same sort of questions come up over and over again. Same with when we're talking to welfarists, the same questions come up over and over and over again. And yes, I do need to learn how to be more patient with welfarist vegans and control my temper. I'm still working on that. I'm not saying that I'm perfect in any way or that I'm anywhere sort of where I need to be, but I certainly would much prefer that you had a maybe a heated exchange with someone and didn't compromise things, rather than you just completely folded just so that you could, like, avoid a slightly uncomfortable situation, or because you want them to like you. Everybody wants to be liked. And that's a big problem, because if you're so desperately, desperately wanting people to like you, people who don't even know you, then you will make compromises and in order to create this illusion of this sort of self-reassurance that you need to be liked by someone that you don't even know. It's like it's more important for the person to like you than it is for you to do the right thing. I'm quite happy for people to dislike me, because I'm very antisocial and I don't want superficial friendships with people who I don't agree with morally. So I have no problem with not backing down and having someone walk away and think, gosh, I don't like her. I mean, that's no problem to me at all. But I wish that there were more people who were sort of willing to sort of be, disliked, as it were, by challenging people. Then they are so desperately wanting to be liked and are compromising the animals in order to do that. I just think that that's wrong. And once we get more and more people sort of, once you get more and more people sort of get sort of promoting this kind of things, we won't there'll be more, and then there'll be it'll be more of a social group. It's like this, like the people who are worried about having a social group, there'll be a great big social group of abolitionists, you know, and you can go and there'll be abolitionist parties and, you know, all this stuff and abolitionist potlucks and, you know, but it's going to take a movement to make that happen. And if you're not part of it, then, you know, how's it ever going to happen? So, come on, you know, just relax and think about the victims and just keep doing the right thing. And, you know, you can, you might have some challenging conversations, but you'll grow from them. And you'll learn about yourself, and the best thing of all is you will be standing up for what is right and helping these animals. You really will be. That's helping them. Believe me, that's helping them. Standing up for them and talking about their moral personhood and letting people know that it's unacceptable to do what is being done to them is helping them. How can that not help them? Anyway, there was something else I was going to say, but I can't remember now. I'm doing my market stall this week. Very, very excited. It's at the Devonport Market. I have to set up from 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to get there really early because I haven't set up my tent in ages. And I hope it goes well. I won't have any cupcakes, so I'll just have extra literature on the table. So wish me luck. I plan to be a gentle, smart educator. We'll see how I go. The intent is definitely there, but I'll tell you one thing I will not be doing, and I will not be doing, is making people feel better about continuing to consume animals. That I will not do. All right, have a lovely day, night, evening, morning, whatever, and I'll be back.